Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
From the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Earlier today, I spoke with Drew Harwell, a technology reporter at The Washington Post. He's been covering how social media is in overdrive right now, spreading lies, disinformation about that shooting, the suspected shooter, the Secret Service, and anything else that will get clicks.
This happens after every big news event these days, right? People rush online to figure out what happened, to understand the reality of it, that they're not always going to news sources. They're depending on people, who, some of whom are telling the truth and some are just trying to score political points. And so in the latter category, you saw a lot of people who were, either skewing the events to, you know, satisfy their political side. There was a lot of people on the left who were, you know, pulling out things to support the idea that this was all staged to help Trump's political chances. And they were, pointing to little misconstrued items like that. Then on the right, you had a lot of people who felt like this was all a big setup. And, you know, they were very suspicious, and there were a lot of claims, including from, you know, anonymous message boards like 4chan, of people saying they were the sniper and they were told not to take out the gunman and that kind of thing. So, you know, in the flurry after a big news event, there's so much chaos, there's so little information that's going around. So people just start making it up. And then it's just made harder when you have kind of trolls and bad actors who are going online really looking to fool people.
Right. So I'm going to use the crude, coarse term that people use to describe these bad actors. They're called shit posters, professional posters. What is their objective?
Everybody is different. A lot of them just want attention, right? They, you know, the different tiers of shit posters, like you said, there are some people who are just doing it for the lols, for the laughs, right? They want to cause chaos. They want to be smarter than everybody else. Those people are just a cruddy underlayer of the internet now. They come out all the time. And on this event, you saw specifically there was one guy who kind of looked like the gunman, and he posted a photo of himself and he posted a video saying, "I did it for this reason. I did it because I hate Republicans and I hate Trump and I got away." And, you know, he did it for giggles, basically. But it
is that
created
the selfie
this
video?
Giant. Yes. Yeah. He posted a selfie video from his car. And to him, he probably felt like, "Ha, I'm going to really fool people." And he did, because that became something people were really sharing. They were thinking, "Oh my God, here's the gunman's motive." You know, and we know the FBI has not shared a clear motive for the gunman yet. So it just added confusion to it. It made people, scared that this guy was still out there. So you have that kind of tier of shit poster. Then you have people who are on the more kind of partisan side, where they want the understandings of the event to support their politics, to be kind of like a cudgel for them against the other side. And you saw that really, you know, from the left and the right on an event like this, where people were just trying to pull out different claims to either, you know, hold up that this was all President Biden's fault, or this was all the Democrats' fault, or, you know, that this was all, this was all staged, that Trump was making it up all along. You have some people who want to kind of skew the facts and kind of put their thumb on the scale to really change these things. And, you know, the internet, because these platforms don't always police as well as they should, it's just really hard for any normal person to go on there and really get a sense of what the truth is.
So when Twitter was Twitter before Elon Musk bought it, they had an attempt at doing moderating content, policing content. They had people who were employed in doing that, and that no longer exists there. He famously fired all those people, and he, in the name of free speech, apparently, that's what he claimed. So are we seeing how this is even worse now than had it had old Twitter still been around.
Yeah, it does seem worse. And, you know, to be fair, Twitter was never all that great at this. They had a lot of moderators, but it was such a raucous forum. And it was so popular among people who were really dialed into the news and wanting to talk about it and score political that there were always, you know, moments of misinformation. But at least they tried, you know, and under Elon Musk, like you said, he has basically disbanded and fired a lot of the content moderators. They've kind of added a lot of different rules that are kind of shaped by Elon's own personal politics. I follow a lot of these events as a reporter, and I'm on X. It seemed pretty bad over the weekend. I mean, a lot of claims that would have been swatted down in the past. We're not just living, but we're thriving. We're going viral. We're getting, you know, millions of views. And, you know, and actual reporting was sort of sinking below it, not really being seen. And so that's just a clear sort of sign of how big the problem has become there.
But Musk has monetized Twitter for super users. So if a person is able to get a lot of likes and repost, then they can be monetarily rewarded. So they're incentivized to say the most outrageous things that could put money in their pocket.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They don't get any more money for being right or accurate or non-incendiary. They get money based off of how many people looked at their tweet. And as we know online, the thing that really drives people is outrage. If you can piss someone off or get them feeling emotional, get them feeling like this is some secret truth that they need to share, they're going to share it and they're going to look at it. And so, yeah, like you said, I mean, Elon has basically, you know, has set up this incentive structure rewarding all the worst behavior. And so, of course, people are responding to that. And so you have the real kind of political opportunists out there, and you have the rage baiters out there who just want to get views no matter what they say. And it all just sort of, you know, for all of us in the middle who just want a platform to think about these big events, we're kind of the test subjects here, and we have to deal with the how this incentive structure can go wrong.
So immediately after the shooting happened, we saw posts saying, here's the shooter's name. He's a member of Antifa, or it was staged, all these other. Do we need to do more to educate the users of these platforms to recognize in the immediate aftermath of these events, don't believe anything that you see on these platforms?
Truth is, after big events like this, our supply of information about what happened is just naturally low, right? We're all just picking up the pieces. And the interest level from people, the demand for that information is really high. So the people who fill in that gap are the BSers, right?
And right. So there's a vacuum of information, and this bogus posters are able to fill that vacuum and actually disinform people, whether by with a political agenda or just because they want to see the world burn.
Right, exactly. So the only thing that we can do as normal people is, like you said, up that media literacy, up that patience level, and understand that just because you see something online doesn't make it right. I think we all kind of know that. We're all sophisticated enough. But in a moment like this where you're just staring at your phone and scrolling and you're seeing a lot, it's so hard to process any individual piece of information. So just take your time. I mean, understand that these things, we have, you know, so much changes in the first 24 or 48 hours after an event like this. And if somebody really seems certain on the internet, you have no idea who they are and they're sharing something you don't believe, trust your intuition and try and understand that these things are never as easy processes to go through.
That's Drew Harwell, Washington Post technology reporter. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're back live now, and we invite your phone calls. We want to hear what you have to say about the recent events. President Donald Trump surviving an assassination attempt on Saturday. The cacophony of craziness that's been online, different opinions, some people claiming that it was staged, some people saying that this is something that President Biden is responsible for. President Biden has firmly condemned the shooting in remarks that he made Saturday night, and he has gone broadcasting to the nation, calling for calm, calling for unity. President Trump is also demanding unity moving forward, but still he maintains many of his characteristic talking points. So where are we right now moving forward in this critical time in America as we approach our national elections? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. Did the assassination attempt, has it changed your vote? Do you think it will change other people's vote one way or another? What do you see? How do you think we got here? And where do you think we're going? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. With me in the studio to help parse this out, I'm joined by John Taylor. He is the department chair and professor in the Department of Political Science and Geography at UTSA. And Professor Taylor, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you, David.
Well, I mean, what do you take, how do you see the reaction online, particularly, you know, as we were speaking earlier with the Washington Post reporter on technology about his seeing how the social media incentivizes the worst takes, and we saw a lot of bad takes.
I would not disagree with that at all. When I was sitting at home on Saturday, I was scrolling through Twitter and then noticed all of a sudden that there had been some breaking news about Trump. Within probably 15 minutes at best, if not even that long, I began to see all these conspiracy theories started breaking out, and there was some radical Antifa type that had done this. It was some sort of, you know, international terrorist that had done this. And then you start see on the other side, it's all fake, or it's the deep state that did it. It was amazing to behold, but also incredibly demoralizing to see.
And let's go to a caller. We do have Sean on the line, and Sean has called in. Sean, you're on the air.
Yeah, so I prior to the assassination attempt, I would have thought it was still kind of a toss-up, going to be close. But I actually think now Trump is going to win. Not just Trump, Republicans are going to win landslide all the way through. I'm guessing supermajority in everything because it's going to be about the turnout. They're going to have 100% turnout or close there. It's going to be – but Democrats are not going to get as much turnout as last time. Because we already know that there's a feeling of demoralization on that side. So they'll have a lower turnout. Republicans will be close to 100%. There'll even be some independents that'll switch over, and it's going to be a complete blowout. And I think it will be, like, you know, as Trump says, like, numbers we've never seen before. It's going to be that. That's what's going to happen. All right, thank you.
Well, Sean, thank you for your call. We appreciate that. And other listeners, you want to call in with your hot take about what do you think is going to happen with America moving forward since the failed assassination attempt on Donald Trump? Call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. John Taylor, what do you think about Sean's take?
I got to respectfully disagree. Data clearly shows that both sides are energized, that the numbers are pretty close. Trump is up maybe 1 or 2 points in some polls. Other polls nationally, Biden's up 1 or 2 points. This is going to be a very close election. It's going to be a turnout election. He's right in that regard. But to say that somehow Republicans are going to have 100% turnout and independents are also going to vote for Trump, and it's going to be a landslide of biblical proportions, I think is misreading our political landscape in July versus November.
So there are lots of elements that lead to a successful campaign. And voter enthusiasm certainly is one of them because it can provide you additional funds. People will open up their wallets and give money. You have more volunteers who will help do the Get Out the Vote campaign. And you can create this impression of inevitability But do you see any of that happening in Trump's favor?
I mean, I guess maybe. I don't know. I mean, the Biden campaign has been quite good at fundraising. In fact, they did more fundraising in the day or two before Trump was basically the assassination attempt, when Biden gave a speech to NATO and he gave a press conference after that. So I'm not convinced that somehow it's going to help Trump in this regard. In fact, not to sound crass here or belittling, the former President Trump actually fundraised on the assassination attempt hours after it occurred with a picture of him with a defiant fist up.
And so why is that crass?
It's crass in the sense of, you're really going to show something like this other than to energize your own supporters, obviously. I don't think it does necessarily anything for independent voters or swing voters.
Let's go to the caller. We have Margaret on the Margaret, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. And I'm going to go back to the very basics here. The only thing we seem to know about the shooter at this point, well, we know several things, but the most significant thing for me is that he was a child who was bullied throughout high school, probably going back to grade school. And that leaves a mark on you over time. And I think he recognized in Donald Trump a major bully, and his way of trying to resolve his own problem was to try to get rid of the problem. Now, if we think about other shooters, especially in these 20-year-old categories, they often are of the same ilk. They've been bullied all their lives, and their shooting has something to do with trying to work through this problem. And I'm sorry he's dead.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Margaret, for that call. So let me just address a couple of things here. Even NPR just reported this in the newscast going into the program just now, saying that the shooter, Crooks, had donated $15 to a liberal progressive organization years ago when he was 15 years old, and that's false. That didn't happen. It's been misreported. There was actually someone of a similar name in Pennsylvania who was in his 60s who made that donation. And we can get into the problem of media reporting in the frenzy and how they will regurgitate bad, sloppy reporting over and over again. And that's exactly what happened here. But the fact is still is that he was a registered Republican, and he was known to be a person with very conservative views to the people who knew him in high school. And so John Taylor, people are scratching their heads, like Margaret, coming up with these elaborate ideas, pop psychology. Why did he try to kill Donald Trump? There is a theory out there that he was an accelerator. So people are saying, and I've heard this on Alex Jones and others who say, oh, if anyone ever killed Donald Trump, we'd have a civil war the next day. And there are people who want that. They want to see the world burn. And he seemed like, and I don't know. Okay, this is all speculation. We don't know. All the facts are that he was a Republican, he was a conservative, and he was the shooter. Why he wanted to take out Donald Trump. And if you think he was just trying to put on a show to accidentally kind of make it look like it was a false flag assassination, that doesn't work, okay? If you're going to go out there with that high-powered kind of a weapon, you're out there to exterminate someone like he did to that poor person who was at the rally. So I'm going to get your reaction to all that, John.
Sure.
Taylor.
Well, first of all, you're quite correct on the caliber. This was not a case of a false flag. This was not a case of a fake shooting. An AR-15 is a .226 caliber bullet, which means it wouldn't have nicked Trump's ear, it would have caused catastrophic damage. So to say that somehow this was a fake shooting and somehow he was using blood caplets is completely ludicrous.
So this guy Crooks was part of the
acceleration.
He was a gun club member when he was in high school. And he was famously bad a comically bad shot. So, I mean, take that for what it is.
Take it for what it's worth, exactly. I mean, AR-15s are designed to be, quote, user-friendly, and they are also single shot. So the question is, you know, from what I know, he didn't use a bump stock. So you're talking single shots trying to take out people, which means he had a relatively steady aim. He had a very clear line of sight, which is probably his greatest advantage he had, as well as the high ground. Which is why you have to give credit to the Secret Service for taking him out so quickly.
He may have been under fire.
He may have been under fire, exactly.
As he was shooting. Right. The exchange of fires.
We don't know. We've not gotten any of these kind of briefings yet. It would be nice to have that information eventually. But going back to your observation about accelerationist, this is a concern. This is something people need to be aware of if they don't know what accelerationists are. They are people, as you said, who want to basically see the world burn. They want to bring down the current system by any means necessary. They tend to be, for the most part, on the right, although there are a few on the left as well. Primarily on the right, though, who basically would love to see essentially chaos in the streets, civil war, and an authoritarian regime take our place that we have now.
I mean, I saw a post online, people from the right saying, you guys, you liberals are lucky. We were an inch away from a civil war, which you would have lost because we're armed and ready. I don't know about that last part, if how that would work out. Certainly, it would not be good for anyone in this country. You know, what a civil war in the United States would look like would be domestic terrorism on a massive scale, where going anywhere in public would put anyone in jeopardy of bombs and drone attacks and all sorts of issues.
It would be the collapse of American civilization as we know it. It would be beyond measure of chaos that we have never experienced and for most Americans have never even seen.
So, I mean, I want to get to this point, and this is something I really want to highlight. I mean, we should never, you know, as a moral individual, want to see anyone killed and murdered. That would be terrible. And you may think that Donald Trump is not a person who deserves to be in office, but everyone in America should be thankful that he was not killed, because we're moral and we don't want anyone killed. But had he been killed, we would probably be looking at a very different and horrible America today.
I don't even want to think about chaos in the streets, domestic violence to be taking place, extrajudicial killings, just in the aftermath.
So roaming death squads.
Yeah, among other things. It's frightening to think about. We're a democracy. We solve our differences through the ballot box and not by bullets.
Let's go to Randall on the phones. And Randall, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'm going to go in a completely different direction.
Okay.
First of all, I agree with your first caller, Sean, that Trump is going to win. I think he's got it now, but my thinking on this is a little bit different. I think we are witnessing the birth of a new religion. We have been watching the theocratic fascists hiding behind the Christian cross draped with the American flag. They have been Trump's biggest supporters, and they have been fueled by their religious fervor. Now think about this. Trump survived an assassination attempt. Why? Either because he was blessed and chosen by God, or because, in some eyes, Trump is God, the second coming. Now, it remains to be seen if this new religious figure is more like Jesus Christ or Allah, or more like L. Ron Hubbard or Jim Jones. But we are seeing the birth of a new deity that is a combination of politics and religion, unlike anything we've ever seen before. And it's going to take a couple of years to get there, but we are well on the path.
Well, Randall, thank you for your call. We've got about a minute before we go to break. So, John Taylor, do you think there are a lot of people who think like Randall, or is he?
Well, there is a concern about Christian nationalism. There's no question. And what we've seen already, this push for you know, the so-called Seven Mountains mandate and doctrine and all that, we have it here in San Antonio at certain large churches. And they are most assuredly aligned with political goals that are definitely different in terms of evangelicals from the
1970s. But I don't see that changes the trajectory
election. It does. So, I don't see it doing it either.
So, and I don't know if this is going to last. Is the fervor over the assassination attempt is going to mean anything as we go into voting?
No.
So let's go to break. Our phone lines are open. Tell us what you think, what you saw, what you heard, what you want from this. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues when we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're hashing out how we are feeling, how we're processing, what we're dealing with after the Saturday attempted assassination on former President Donald Trump. Of course, we probably have all seen the clips. We've witnessed it in one way or another. But still, then if you've gone online and you just see this incredible cesspool of bad takes, it's just accelerating the divide. It hasn't moved. If we're in trench warfare between the right and the left, this hasn't moved the trenches closer together, but it has made them deeper. So what's your take on what happened with Donald Trump? Will this change your vote? Do you think it will change the election's outcome? And what are your impressions about President Biden? Also, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. With me in the studio, John Taylor. He's the department chair and professor in the Department of Political Science and Geography at UTSA. And let's go to Rick on the phones. And Rick, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Just wanted to correct John Taylor on one of his comments he made earlier. The AR-15 is not a .226.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's a 223 class, okay. 5.56.
Thank you.
So I just want to
still does massive damage, though, unfortunately.
So Rick, it's still a main weapon, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm prior military. I know what it's capable of.
Sure.
And the whole Trump situation is very unfortunate. I mean, solve your issues at the poll. You don't need to try to assassinate a man.
Exactly. Well, Rick, thank you so much for that correction. I know that there are many, many people who really want that type of information to be precise and accurate. Let's go to another caller, and it's Britt. And Britt, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. It's actually Brooke.
Okay. Go ahead, Brooke. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, hi. Well, I wanted to call in for a few reasons. I'm a moderate person politically, and the assassination attempt has not changed my mind on how I'm going to vote. I still plan to vote Democrat for Biden for policy reasons. And I'm still very concerned about Project 2025, and that hasn't changed. So I don't think that most people, I think by now, people, how they're going to vote is how they were going to vote. I don't see really anyone changing their mind.
All right. Well, Brooke, thank you so much for that. And so for folks who don't know, Project 2025 has been called the transition plan, been put together by the Heritage Foundation. It has been written by 25 former members of the Trump administration. Project 2025 and Heritage Foundation, they are sponsors of the Republican National Convention that is starting today in Milwaukee. This is something that is, although Trump has tried to distance himself from the Project 2025 because it has become weighing on him negatively, it is there, it is real, there is some connective tissue between him and this vision for America, where they plan to take widespread changes to the government, particularly economic, social policies, the role of the federal government and its agencies. The plan proposes taking partisan control of the Department of Justice, the FBI, Department of Commerce, the FCC, and the Federal Trade Commission, dismantling the Department of Homeland Security, sharply reducing environmental and climate change regulations in favor of fossil fuel production. There's also talk of their enforcing the Comstock Act to prosecute anyone who will send or receive contraceptives and abortion pills and information about abortion. It also proposes to criminalize pornography and also remove protections against discrimination for people based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And that is just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
So if Donald Trump gets elected, if Project 2025 is put into place and they expect it to go in within his first 100 days of office, that this would radically change America and turn it into something that we would not recognize today. Also, it projects they want to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and things like that. So, John Taylor, That's not changed since the shooting.
That has not changed at all. In fact, if people are curious about Project 2025, look instead for Agenda 47, which is the Trump campaign's, quote, agenda, the same 100 days. Look and see how much of them parallel each other. So Trump can deny all he wants about Project 2025, try to distance himself from it, but that's not the case at all. People need to be concerned because now you have a Supreme Court who is essentially through the Chevron, by basically abandoning the Chevron doctrine, has basically cut the regulatory state off at the knees when it comes to trying to be able to regulate everything from the environment to civil liberties to civil rights to reproductive choice. On top of that, people should be concerned about Schedule F, which people might think, what the heck is Schedule F? That deals with the Civil Service Act, specifically with the politicization of the civil service. Trump wants to basically remove the political boundaries that are in place if he becomes president and essentially replace lifetime civil servants with 50,000 plus supporters.
So it's the return of the spoils system.
Oh, more than that. You're talking personless loyalism that is much more along the lines of Orbán's Hungary.
All right. So the point being, we're all saddened about Donald Trump have this assassination attempt on him. But does it change the politics of this election? I mean, no.
No, not really. I mean, Trump is still Trump. The policies he's pushed from his pot shots at migrants to his supposed opposition and support, and then leave it to the states regarding reproductive choice are still there.
All right, let's go to another caller. Let's go to Matt. And Matt, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. So to answer your question, I'm still going to vote for Joe Biden. Donald Trump is not a deity. A lot of the things, again, I'm glad he's going to be okay. But a lot of this comes from him, threatening judges, threatening witnesses, having his supporters threaten these people, and unfortunately, it's come back to him. I hope that he's in self-reflection and is trying to find ways to push the country apart. He somehow decides to try to, help put the country together.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that call, Matt. Appreciate it. So Donald Trump is now demanding unity in the wake of the surviving the shooting. So to the point of if you're shot at and you survive and that somehow makes you a deity, well, then we have lots of people who are walking around who have survived being shot at.
Exactly.
But the other issue is that people who claim that God was protecting him and say, well, where was this protective God in Uvalde?
Thank you.
Where was it, in all these other horrific tree of life, so you have to wonder about that.
It diminishes the concept and ideas of God and what we believe God, those of you who believe.
And so, so the caller saying that he's not going to change his vote, who's going to switch from Biden to Trump based upon what happened on Saturday?
Low information voters at best. Maybe, if that.
All right, let's go to another caller. We have Richard on the line. Richard, you're on the air.
Yes. My question for your guest is, I would never vote for Trump, never have, never would. But I'm wondering if your guest feels like this incident might calm down some of the people on MSNBC from talking so much about Trump being Hitler.
That's a good question.
Thank you so much for the call, Richard. Appreciate it. Comparisons to... comparing Trump to Hitler, you got to wonder, it used to be once the first person who brings up Hitler in an argument has lost the argument.
The Overton window, as it's called. Again, you should be comparing him to Viktor Orban, the prime minister of Hungary, or for that matter, Erdogan, the president of Turkey, somebody like that who is an autocrat. Some of us actually teach democracy classes, and classes particularly on global democracy. And a lot of discussions I have deal with autocracy and illiberal democracies. And what Trump is proposing is illiberal democracy. You don't want to live in an illiberal democracy.
So, but you look at how Hitler rose to power.
Right.
He did not rise to power in a coup. He wasn't elected to the become Chancellor of Germany. He was appointed Chancellor of Germany in 1932. And once he was appointed there, he was able to claim extra powers, special powers, which he then used to weaponize the government against his political foes. And then he took over the government. So, I mean, I think there are legitimate comparisons to be made. You know, if someone gets into office and they use that office to weaponize the government, to take out their political enemies, any opposition, control the media, and then make themselves a dictator. And Trump has said he will make himself dictator day one, although he says it day one only. I'm not sure about that. But, I mean, you know, that's not the talk of someone who is not Hitler.
It's someone who's enamored with autocracy and authoritarianism.
All right. And then people are saying it's this chitter chatter that led to the shooting of Trump. But we don't know that because we have yet to learn much more about the shooter Crooks. And what we have learned about him is that he's actually could have been further to the right of Trump, and that his whole shooting scheme was an attempt to push the country over the edge. So it wasn't about trying to stop Hitler. May it would have been trying to bring about a Hitler. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're going to get some more callers on the air when we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Tell us what you're thinking as we are trying to process the attempted assassination on Donald Trump. The driving question is, do you think this is going to change votes? Will this change your vote? Will this make it more likely that Donald Trump will become the next president of the United States? And how do you think Biden is doing? We really want to try and get to that as well, because, you know, just before the bullets started flying in Pennsylvania, there was all this talk about, you know, is Biden up for the task? Has this resolved that issue? 833-877-8255. Let's go to Sean on the phones. And Sean, you're on the air.
I just wanted to say about the service response to the whole thing. I mean, this was shown over and over and over again. And if you have someone is taking a shot at your head, you are ducking and running. And here's Trump up there with his fist up. What are these Secret Service people doing, man? I mean, shouldn't they be just covering him like a blanket and getting the hell out of there?
Sean, thank you so much. You bring up an interesting point. There's been a lot of criticism of the Secret Service. We know that they had the counter-sniper team. We've heard that there were that the outside perimeter of the rally was the responsibility of local law enforcement, and they were the ones who were supposed to try to keep those rooftop clear, and so that Crooks could never have gotten to where he was. But the issue of whether or not Secret Service had a shot on Crooks and couldn't take it because they were waiting for the go order, we don't know. There has to be a full accountability of what happened that day. And the silence that we're getting is not helping America right now, John Taylor.
No, it's really not. It's about motive and opportunity about the shooter. Okay, what was the motive? How did he get the opportunity? And that, again, is where we have a lot of recriminations right now. Secret Service, local law enforcement. And to answer the caller's question about, you know, why was Trump, you know, being basically paraded like that by the Secret Service?
That's not a good word.
Sorry.
Okay,
parade is not a good word.
Trump was clearly saying, wait.
Yeah.
He wants his shoes. And then he was definitely saying he wanted to, you know, do the fist bump, and he was saying, fight.
Right.
And, you know,
he knew he was
a showman.
Oh, no question.
Okay, you know, suddenly, you know, he knows And he's had these drills before where, you know, they've rushed him off the stage. So, yeah.
I mean...
I mean, he knows how to play the
He does. He knows how to play it. But and I think he probably knew he was not seriously injured just based on, and the Secret Service probably did as well, based on the assessment. Although, again, that's going to have to come out in a report at some point.
So you mentioned earlier about how you teach things. And I want to know, political science, how is political science taught these days, given how, you know, back when I used to go to school, we were told that there was this thing called checks and balances. Well, that we were told that all, you know, the different branches of the government were equal. And now that's no longer the case. I mean, that's not am I making that up?
No, you're not making it up. I mean, that's the, in fact, that's the quandary I think we face as a discipline, not just at UTSA, but everywhere, is how do we teach American politics based on a Supreme Court's interpretation of presidential authority and power, be it immunity, be it the rule of law, be it the regulatory state. You have a judge today in Florida who basically tossed out the special counsel that's going to be appealed to the 11th Circuit. It brings up the idea of, again, of a strong executive, which is an imbalance in our concept of checks and balances. Honestly, if this continues, well, obviously we're going to be rewriting American politics books.
But, you know, the founders, Alexander Hamilton, they did not want presidential immunity. And
right.
that was laid out specifically in Federalist Papers. And so the idea that the Supreme Court will say that there is immunity in the office for official acts flies in the face of this idea that they are, you know, originalists.
No question. Particularly originalists who claim that they read the Federalist Papers and look to it for advice and for inspiration for legal rulings.
So what does that mean, Mick Biden? If he has, you know, these people are claiming that, including a congressman, Mike Collins, a Republican from Georgia, is saying that there should be some sort of investigation because that Biden is responsible with his inflamed rhetoric about Trump.
I think he's been listening too much to his colleague from Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and conspiracy theories.
But so Biden has, you know, throttled back his campaign because of the assassination attempt. And you could think in a way, that's very, very nice of you, you know, but I don't know what his plans are. He was supposed to be in Austin today to celebrate the anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. But, you know, how long should he do that?
He's probably going to do it until tomorrow. Tonight, in fact, is probably the end of it because he's actually interviewing with Lester Holt on NBC, which was the interview that was supposed to take place in Austin is now going to take place in D.C. So my guess is that we're back to normal beginning tomorrow.
And now Trump, he is at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. How do you think he's playing this?
I mean, he claims, based on what we said yesterday, he's going to rewrite his acceptance speech. He was going to make it, I guess, what? George Herbert Walker Bush kinder, gentler? No, I don't think so.
1,000 points of light.
1,000 points of light. I don't see that happening. Not Trump. That's just not his personality. So him to say that he's rewriting it doesn't.
But the thing is, his base, they don't want a kinder, gentler Trump. They want the fire and the fury.
They do. They absolutely want that. They want somebody who's going to be bombastic, who's going to be out there.
So speaking of which, there has been some attempt to back away from the anti-abortion agenda of the Republican caucus in their platform committees. They want to play down the Project 2012 and the Comstock Act in an attempt to try to bring along these voters who could be on the fence, who are concerned about their reproductive rights and the right to contraceptions and other things. But that, it turns out, that is alienating some of their hard right supporters, the theological supporters who are saying, you know, we want you to not go weak, don't go wobbly on the abortion issue.
Sure. Trump and some of the other Republicans know that this is not a winning issue for them right now. that the Dobbs decision actually has aided Democrats. Every place where there has been an election since the Dobbs decision, Democrats have won, or the ballot initiatives have won. So the result is that they've got to play it down and hope that their very conservative supporters, the anti-abortion people, will go along with them. All I would say is this. You know, we basically have had aspects of Project 2025 in Texas already, well before the thing actually came out. So if you want to wonder whether or not this will not happen nationally if Trump becomes president, I would say you're dreaming if you think that Trump is actually being completely truthful on this.
So when we look at Houston, still a quarter of a million people in Houston do not have electricity over a week after they were hit by Hurricane Beryl. And of course, it's just been terrible that this happened because of the deregulation of the energy sector and allowing CenterPoint to not have a redundancies in place for their grid. And now people pay the price for it. This is the model, some say, that that we would like to see with Project 2025 for deregulation for the entire country.
Sure, I would agree with that completely, that we're seeing the hollowing out of the state.
And so moving forward, a week from now, do you think we're still going to be talking about or worrying about Trump's wounds, his ear?
No, I doubt that seriously. A week is a lifetime in politics, as we say. And a month is an epoch. We're moving on to other things.
But so, you know, there is this expression in politics, waving the bloody shirt.
Right.
So what is that?
Oh, I would guess we're going to see the waving of the bloody shirt. It goes back to the Civil War and post-Civil War when Republicans were waving it against Democrats who had supported, you know, the Confederacy. I would not be surprised to see it waved this week at the Republican National Convention.
Where they say Trump spilled his blood for
right.
America. He is, you know, and therefore he is deserving of your loyalty.
Right. I would say that. Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, why not play it to the hilt if you can? It's cynical, I know, but there it is.
So, but back to what the thing we talked about in the very first segment of the program when I was talking to the Washington Post reporter about people need to wise up about what they see online. You know, in the immediate after effect, after a disturbance, like assassination attempt, almost everything you see, I would say, in the first 24, 48 hours, do not believe. I mean, even if it comes,
you know, I would agree.
Just be patient.
Exactly.
You don't need to know everything there is to know right now.
I mean, as your mom said, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. There's a novel idea. It's because the internet is forever, and whatever you post out there, you're going to look like a fool a week from now.
Yeah, but that's everyone's.
That's it. I know.
No one sees. That's the problem with
that's
America.
The problem.
We have this amnesia. Well, I want to thank John Taylor. He is the department chair, professor in the Department of Political Science and Geography at the UTSA for coming with us today and taking calls as we worked through what happened with Donald Trump. We're glad that he's well. We
Indeed.
Wish him the best in health moving forward. And that everyone, let's have a ballots, not bullets, solution to America's problems. John, thank
Amen.
You.
Amen. Absolutely.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.